All right, so welcome back. Let's do a quick sound check. Can everyone hear me okay online? Yeah, good. How about here in person? Anybody having trouble hearing? All right. And I just want to check in. How many people are relatively new to these evenings? You could raise your hand here in person. Raise them kind of high so I can see them easily. All right, great. How about online? You could raise, you know how to do your... raise your virtual hand. All right, great. So welcome to everyone who's new. And the reason I ask is we're kind of in the middle of a series called the Ox Herding Pictures, which I want to kind of help make more accessible if you're new to this topic. So this is basically a graphic way of depicting the spiritual path. It's from the Zen tradition. And it goes through these different stages, if you will, different images and verses that depict different stages we go through. But also it's not like a progressive, there's somewhat of a progressiveness to it, but it's also a circular aspect. And we're right now in picture number 6. So just to give you a little bit of a background there. So it might be a little bit confusing, but we can try to explain that as we go along. So this picture tonight, let me see if I have. Okay, I don't have the picture. It's basically a picture of, they're called the ox herding pictures. So the ox represents our true nature, our inner nature, and kind of the depth of the spiritual practice. And when we start to practice, our true nature seems a little aloof, a little distant. So we spend time trying to find where that ox, that manifestation of our inner nature is. So there's this whole kind of journey that we go through. And this, the month last, we actually had caught the ox and we had tamed it. So we had started to really tame our own inner experience, training ourselves to be present. And so there's kind of this sweet spot we get into in meditation where we're not having to work so hard at it. We're just able to just simply meditate and it seems to be running itself. And this, you know, sometimes happens over a period of time. Sometimes we get tastes of that and then we lose it, you know, for years and we come back. So just don't have any sense of judgment about where you are or should be on this path, but just to notice that. So last month was really the sense of taming the ox, learning to have that steadiness of attention. Now this month is called Riding the Ox Home. So for those of you who have been on this journey since the beginning of the year in January, you know, there's been this whole process of trying to find this ox, trying to look for it in the ravines and in the lost in the masses of the forest and the endless trails, starting to see some glimpses, actually starting to try to catch it and tame it. And then finally, this month, we've actually tamed the ox and we're riding it home. So I'm going to read the little verse here. It's called Mounting the Ox or the Bull, Slowly I Return Homeward. The voice of my flute intones through the evening. Measuring with hand beats, the pulsating harmony, I direct the endless rhythm. Whoever hears this melody will join me. So this is an image of this, it's a beautiful kind of watercolor ink, maybe it's the ink on just a black and white ink showing this little figure riding this massive ox. And this picture has a sense of peace, a sense of ease, a sense of harmony with it. And tonight I want to explore just two aspects of this. That this is a very critical picture in our spiritual path. In some ways it's the completion of our path. As much as we can take our ego, take our sense of self to do the meditation. This is kind of the highest level that we can get and still be really in the sense of self. Okay. So there's a sense of a rarefied harmony, a sense of embodiment, interconnection. So the person and the ox are really interconnected. There's a sense of, okay, I'm at the end of this journey. The other aspect is that this picture, because it's only the sixth picture and there's four more pictures, puts this question to us of why are we practicing? What's really the deepest reason for our practice? Because this picture isn't the end of the Buddha's path. It's just kind of this important stage. But the Buddha actually went much deeper than that. And this is the invitation that these pictures point toward us. And how far are we willing to go? So let's explore this a little bit. So this first aspect, it's a sense of a completion of the journey and struggle. So the first picture of like searching for the ox and the pictures of trying to struggle with the ox, there can be a tremendous amount of struggle in our practice as we're learning how to relax the monkey mind, if you will, the mind that just keeps chattering, how we learn to steady our attention, how we learn to grapple with the worries, our anxiety, our fears. How do we actually learn to start to navigate through that? How do we deal with the five hindrances? This is all part of the terrain that we have studied and worked with, you know, both in these pictures and whenever someone's been on the practice for a while knows this terrain well. And there's a point where the practice starts to mature. There starts to be a quality of steadiness that's natural. And some of us, you know, have taste of that. Some of that's really our practice describes how we are. And sometimes it seems very remote. This is all fine. This is all just where we need to be. So this completion of this journey to this point, there's a sense, okay, I've caught this ox, I've tamed the ox, I've understood my true nature, I've kind of harnessed it, and now I can ride myself home. I can start to find myself back into my true home. And this is really the goal from the ego standpoint, the egoic standpoint or the sense of self. The sense of self that sees that there's something lacking. There's something that I have that I need. And this, we started on this spiritual practice and we've come together in that. And all the searching and the struggle finally is tamed. And this is as far as the ego can really go. The sense of self, the sense of identification, that unconscious identification can go. So again, this image, this bull and the person are really connected. They're acting as one. They're going exactly where they want to go. But there's still two different things. There's the bull or the ox, and there's the person. They're very connected. They're, you know, riding, they're touching, their bodies are touching. They're aligned in their action and direction. And there's a sense of trust with that. And they're going homeward. So on one level, it's the completion of our path. Everything's down. Now this verse here has a lot of musical imagery. This voice of my flute intones through the evening. Now, if you recall, for those who have kind of walked on this journey with us, there's been times when sound is really featured in these little verses. And I think they point, there's like this hinting of pointing toward our true nature, pointing toward a sense of stillness, a sense of openness, a sense of interconnection. Like the first picture, you know, searching for the ox, really a frustrating picture. At the very end, I only hear the lotus chirping through the forest at night. So you can imagine times when you've been caught in your own mind, caught in your own reactivity. And for some reason, you just stop and listen to nature and how that brings you right back into the stillness. It touches something new that allows your mind to relax and allows your heart to start to open. It's that first picture. Or the later on, seeing the ox, hearing the sound of the nightingale. It's like this messenger that's calling us into our true nature. And now with this picture, the voice of my flute intones through the evening, measuring with hand beats the pulsating harmony. I direct the endless rhythm. Direct the endless rhythm. So at this point, the music is not outside. It's not leading us. We've actually internalized it. It's actually become inside of us. We're actually manifesting it. So this is this important stage of embodiment in our practice. Now, to make this less esoteric or less obscure, just think of times when you've been interacting with someone and you feel like you're really connected to them. You're actually really listening to them. You're not going from your own opinions, your own ideas, but you're actually making contact with that or that other person, or perhaps with your own experience, your own, like a breath, a sensation, an emotion. Now you're actually observing it. You're actually connected to it. This is the state of harmony, the state of connection. And we could easily stop here. We could say, okay, this is as far as I want to go in the path. And it's actually very significant to have gone this way. And this picture is really the last stop for our ego, last stop for the sense of self. Because the next three pictures, the next four pictures are really about releasing that ego and deeper levels, releasing that sense of separation. Okay, so we're starting to get a little far out there, so hang in there and it may start to make sense as we go along. So riding the ox home. Actually, there's a book that I use as a reference, and that's the title of it, because this is a concrete step. We've gone through this struggle. We've tamed the ox. We're riding home. There's a song by Leonard Cohen called The Ballad of the Absent Mare. It's actually these ox herding pictures. So I encourage you to look it up and listen to it, especially the extended version of it. You can hear the whole process up to this point. And we've gone through this looking for the mare, trying to find it, trying to connect with it, trying to tame it. And then the last first pictures, Leonard just kind of goes into music. So there's not as much guidance with that one. So that was kind of the first aspect of this picture, the sense of completion that I want to talk about. The second aspect, this is really when I talk about that sense of this as far as the ego can go, this is where the second aspect comes. Because it puts the question to us of why are we really practicing? Why? What is our point of practice? Because for many of us, including myself, I started practice with this idea that I wanted to somehow improve myself, to have a more open heart, to be less gripped by my suffering, to be less gripped by the struggle of my life, to find some way of navigating it. But all along with those goals or ideas or aspirations, what was intact was the sense of me, that I was going to try to make myself better. That was just part of the whole parcel. The little figure and the ox, that's part of this whole navigation into this up to this point in these 10 pictures. So that's why these other four pictures that we'll explore the rest of the year, in some ways it's a question of why we, that's a sense of sincerity. How far are we willing to go in this practice? Because if you notice the very last picture, the 10th picture, that's where you actually see the image of the Buddha. The image of the Buddha. And so if you're not familiar with these pictures, go to our website. I know Kathy posted that online. So you can look at those 10 pictures, or you can see those images. So it makes more sense. So the Buddha doesn't show up into that last picture, because that's this much deeper integration that's beyond really our ego, that contracted sense of self. So the question is, are we willing to let go of what's been so important to us? Finding the ox, searching for the ox, to actually let go of the ox. That's the next picture, is the ox is forgotten. The ox is forgotten. Which seems really radical, because we've spent, was it 6-7 months, trying to find the ox, trying to tame the ox. And that's how it is with our practice. At some point, we get this sense that, okay, I feel like I'm really have a level of mastery, a level of skill in meditation, but I still feel a level of suffering. I still feel a sense of insufficiency. Something is not quite all the way there. The Buddha himself went through this. If you recall his journey through when he first decided to start to practice and spent 6 years, the first thing he did is he found a couple meditation masters who taught a form of concentration or jhana practice. And he studied with them so sincerely that they said, you know, you've mastered this. You actually should be up here next to me teaching. He had invitations to teach these two systems. So he had the highest level of understanding. But the Buddha reflected. He realized, just as in these pictures, as we go into next week, next month, which is also next week, that this teaching, to quote the sutta, this teaching does not lead to dispassion, to fading of lust, to cessation, to peace, to direct knowledge, to enlightenment, to nirvana, to nibbana, but only to the base consisting of nothingness. I was not satisfied with that teaching. I left it to pursue my search. So that's the way the Buddha framed this juncture between this picture. That he could have stayed and said, okay, this base consisting of nothingness, it's a form of jhana, form of the trance types of meditations we have in this tradition. But he realized that itself was impermanent. That itself was subject to dukkha. That itself hadn't changed what he really wanted to change. And what he realized is that there's a sense of him that was always present. Just as many of us have noticed that, I noticed that in my practice, at some point, I can only go so far through my ego, so far through my will. And there's still that sense of me who's always watching, always knowing, always evaluating. And then this is where the pictures really go into this marvelous place of starting to see through that, to see through that sense of identification, that sense of I, of me and mine. Not in a way that annihilates us or eliminates things. And quite the contrary, it opens up to a sense of depth of interconnection that's beyond words, beyond ideas. And this is what riding the ox home really means, is going home to that true nature. So there's no sense of separation. There's no space for the sense of ox and the person riding the ox. There's no space for the sense of me who's meditating. There's that deep opening. So I realize that gets a little far out there, and especially if you're just kind of stepping in for this evening. It's also helpful to kind of get a sense of the potential of this practice, where it's aimed to go. And these pictures show it in a very big way, in a very profound way, but not to negate the small ways that this happens, the small ways that the sense of ego, the sense of separation falls away. There's actually moments, many moments in the day that happens. We just tend not to notice it. Because we're so trained to notice when we're contracted, when we're fighting, when we're struggling, when my sense of me, my ego is bruised, when my ego is engaged. We miss those moments of peace. So this is a quick description of the whole practice. And this particular picture, I think, is such an important junction. And getting to, like, we may just want to get to this picture and say, okay, I feel like I'm in harmony. I'm connected to my meditation. I'm still intact. And at some point, we may realize there's something else that's pulling me, something else that's drawing me. This is what we're exploring for the rest of the year. All right, let's just sit quietly for a couple moments, letting those words settle. Thank you for your intention and engagement with that talk. And now I'd like to give you a chance to talk about your own sense of this whole process. So everyone's welcome, and I encourage you to participate in doing some small groups. Now, small groups sometimes are a little intimidating, and maybe you want to be more internal, and that's fine. And to also realize that talking about your practice, exploring it, and listening to other people talk about it, that is what helps you really embody it in a deeper way. Now, if you've never been to Sims, this is your first night, come to those groups. That's perfectly fine. You get to know people a little bit. You can say, I have no idea what he was talking about. Could you explain it? You know, or you may find something that resonates. So these groups, what I'd like you to kind of focus on is this whole image, that sense of how do we, the sense of completion of our practice. What do we feel like is the completion of our practice? When do we feel like we've made it? Like there's nothing more that needs to be done. You know, is it like where I am right now? Like just being able to calm down my mind, that is all I need? Or is there something else that's yearning? And holding it lightly, realizing that your answer today may change tomorrow or next year. And you can talk about anything else around this practice. And I know sometimes people have maybe done some artistic depiction of this picture, and you're welcome to share that in your group. So those in person, I'll invite you to join in a group. So let's do about 4 people or so. And if you'd rather sit out, that's perfectly fine. But again, it's a nice opportunity to develop connections. And those online, Kathy should initiate into some small groups. And if you're by yourself, don't worry, we'll move you around so you're not all by yourself. Okay, so Kathy, go in and open up those groups. We'll do this for 20 minutes, and I'll ring the bell to bring us back. All right, welcome back. I think people are still coming back from the breakout rooms. That's everybody. All right, so welcome back. All right, so we have a chance for any questions you might have or sharing you might have around these Oxfording pictures and also just about your practice in general. That's all very welcome. So those here in person, if you don't mind using the little mic so those online can hear, and those online, you can just raise your virtual hand. Who would like to start? Who would like to share or ask anything? All right, Matt, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. So a common thread I really liked in our group was talking about how the goal is to just be more and more fully right here. You know, like kind of approach this with a goal to like get somewhere, but the place you're going is, you know, really right here. It's one of those like kind of paradoxes. And I was curious if you could speak to like, because there's like, you know, right effort in these things that like you are like, you know, there's somewhere you're kind of trying to go, but also too much like clinging to that, trying to go somewhere different than right here might get you farther from where you want to go, right? And so I wonder if you could speak to that in any way.
Sure, yeah. It's a paradox of even being on a spiritual journey itself, because we talk about you just arrive here, be fully present, and that's kind of the end is kind of the means. And it's a really interesting question, because if we just simply say, okay, I'm going to just sit on the couch and just watch Netflix until I fall asleep, we're not going to deepen into our practice. So there needs to be that level of engagement, the level of discipline, of really practicing. But you kind of said it in your question, is that clinging, that's the key piece. So even though we may have an aspiration, let's say I want to work on my judgmental mind. The way that I get, we're having some trouble with this iPad charging for some reason. So if I die here, I have a backup, so I'll switch. So hopefully it will be pretty smooth. So it's that clinging, that's the key point. When we start to cling, that sense of identification, that sense of, you know, clinging is a very technical word, a very jargon word from Buddhism. But let's think of it in terms of when we get invested in something. And sometimes we don't even realize we're invested until something pushes up against that. Let's say, for example, maybe I don't realize I'm really identified with being a good father to my teenage daughter. Okay. So, but I feel like I'm doing a good job and everything's going well. And then I get some feedback from her that I'm not doing a good job. And that feedback, that highlights my investment and that shows where I was clinging, where I was really attached to being a certain image. Okay. So that in itself shows where I got caught. So I can choose, okay, I want to really look at that criticism. I want to look at that pattern of judgment in a way that allows me to start to see the underlying belief structure around it, the underlying assumptions of self, how it shows up as body sensations, how it shows up as impulses of speech, of action. All that is kind of going into the wise effort, the right effort side of things. But if I'm really invested in looking a certain way, that's when I've kind of shifted into just creating a more polished sense of self, a polished sense of me. And it's slippery because we can think, have you ever seen those, like in, I was just on an elevator and they had the two mirrors on either side and you can kind of look and you can see, you know, yourself being magnified into infinity. And that's kind of a little bit how it is that we look at something and we think we see it. I think I see the sense of self, but we don't realize it's actually the sense of self is seeing the sense of self. It just gets more and more subtle around that. So kind of going, weaving around this topic, but basically it's really important to have aspirations. It's important to have, you know, directions of our practice, things we're investigating, and just at the same time, noticing when we're really, was that same quality of clinging, that sense of identification around it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. All right, how about back here in person? Anyone like to ask or share anything? Yes, do you mind coming up and grabbing the mic so people can hear you? Yeah, that one there, that's great. And just kind of hold it close to your nose. I'm going to turn that you can see you. Okay.
You know, I'm noticing
a little quick.
Yeah, I'm noticing that, you know, I'm mindfulness during the day is really helping my meditation like a lot. So, and I'm able to like be with my breath, but I'm noticing when there's that space that this voice of addiction is just always coming up, popping up, popping up, popping up. And I don't know if that's because I'm getting deeper and quieter. And so when that comes up, do you just kind of let it say its piece and then just go back to the breath? I'm just kind of surprised that this one issue is coming up so strong when I'm getting deeper into meditation.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And tell me more about the issue. You said it's like wanting the addiction or...
Addiction. Oh, why can't you, you know, get over something? Why is it always coming up? You know, it's easier when you're not mindful because you just go by your day and stuff. But when you're... It's just a repeat thought that's always coming up. The quieter I get, it just seems like it wants to have its own attention. And so I don't know, do I allow it to just go instead of get out of here? Or do I just kind of just let it come up?
Okay.
And get it go.
All right, I'll switch back. All right. Yeah, so it's a great question because, you know, it's true that the quieter that we get, it's almost like this parts which are still stuck that are still kind of caught become more highlighted. It's almost like it's an invitation to say, okay, we're kind of quieting things down. And so by contrast, those stuck spots become more obvious. So again, that's very, very common, very natural. But what do you work? How do you work with that? You know, that's the kind of the crux of your question around that. And so there's different strategies. That kind of the first strategy is simply to observe it, to notice it, and see if you can release that impulse, right? So it comes up to the state to have a critical thought or to move toward, you know, do something that you find is not so helpful. you notice it, see if you can release it. That sounds like this is a little more tenacious, right? It has a certain stickiness to it.
Yes.
All right. So it's good to start with that just to see, because sometimes those patterns become looser without you even realizing it. It's okay. See if you can release it. If it becomes sticky, then there's kind of this choice point of how do I work with it? I think sometimes it's helpful to have that sense of firmness that I'm really going to say no to it. But we have to be careful that doesn't just be a new pattern that I'm going to criticize the criticism. I'm going to judge the judgment, right? Because we can do that pretty easily. That's that part of that mirrors that, okay, I'm seeing something more clearly. I don't like it, so I'm judging that. Well, I don't want to judge my judge. I don't want to judge, so I start to judge the fact I'm judging. You just kind of get that. So it's really a shift of attitude. And what I think is really helpful, and it's kind of counterintuitive, is actually when you see that pattern, to almost turn toward it with a quality of appreciation, saying, because it served you in some way. I mean, you didn't just develop it because it, you know, we don't stub our toe and keep stubbing our toe because there's some reason that we tend to do these patterns. It may be buried back in childhood or in those situations, things that may not make so much sense anymore, but they still have that deep kind of momentum behind them. But having that sense of almost like bowing toward it and saying, you know, thank you for how you've tried to serve me. By doing that, it starts to change the sense of aversion. We're trying to change our relationship to it. Because if we're seeing something as a problem, it actually tends to tighten it up, right? It actually maintains that longer. But if we start to see it with a friendliness, just how we train our mindfulness all along, we're just taking something more charged to do that. Okay, let me see. Let me just relate to this. Let me see it. And then by doing that, then you just tune in and see what is it showing you in your mind and body? What's the like sensations in the body? How is it echoing the body? How is the mind state forming around it? The self-belief. Like, you know, if I don't criticize myself, I won't be loved, for example. Something like that comes up. So you start to see more kind of hidden, subtle aspects of that. You start to see it more clearly, then it starts to loosen it up. So basically, we're using the tool of mindfulness to see without resistance, without objection, without bias, to see clearly. And we're learning to apply that to something that has all that charge to it. But by seeing it more and more clearly and seeing how it forms you, then it starts to let go of you. You're welcome. All right, back online. Anyone like to share anything? Back in person, anyone have anything like to ask or share? Hope I see Cuba has her hand up. So Cuba, let's go back to you.
There you go. Tim, I really liked the phrase that you used about the polished sense of self and that's not our goal. And I wonder if you could say more about it because, of course, I think, of course, skillful means is something I want to cultivate. And, you know, does it then become, or how does it become, or how can I be more aware of the pitfall of it being, you know, yet another self I'm presenting? That it's not springing from compassion, it's springing from other motivations.
Yes, that sense of, you know, polishing the sense of self, you know, how does that when you start to notice them, when that's happening. I think most of us approach practice from that, you know, that really that heartfelt way of trying to make ourselves a little better, a little bit more comfortable, a little more ease, having more kindness in how we relate to ourselves and others. Those are all heartfelt qualities. So there's nothing wrong with kind of bringing that sense of intentionality around it, trying to work with your speech. So it's wiser, it's kinder, your actions. That's all very helpful. And as you do that, at some point you may notice that wow, I just have every morning I have to keep polishing this thing up. Something is kind of obscuring it. Where is that coming from? Right. And then by doing that, we start to have that sense, well, this, when I'm doing it, kind of works in the short term, or I have to kind of hold myself a little tightly in these situations. At some point, that tension, that holding becomes more obvious. Like, okay, there's something going on. And that's the invitation to start to notice, how am I really identified with that? And maybe it's not so much about learning how not to speak in an angry way. Maybe it's about really understanding, you know, turning to myself with that deep compassion to see that hurt, you know, that anger springs from. And then see how that hurt even deeper is really linked to something we take very personally about ourselves. Same way we say, this is who I am. This is what I am. I'm not that person who is not good enough, that person who isn't lovable, or whatever it might be. And we start to realize that belief is kind of what keeps everything kind of a little obscure, a little dirty, if you will, for using the cleaning metaphor, cleaning things up. So then we realize, okay, maybe I can keep cleaning this, but if this belief is not seen through, it's going to keep making things dirty. And we start to turn out to that belief and realize that belief is actually a foundation of who we take ourselves to be. And that's really, when I load up the sense of I, of me and mind, that's belief is like a big chunk of it. Okay, so I can try to navigate through that. And some of that is very helpful. And it's part of the landscape of therapy and unpacking all that. And the dharmic standpoint is at some point we see through that, to actually see that there's that we actually are much broader, much more vast than any in that one contracted belief. That belief is just a thought that we've rehearsed and believed in. So there's not a clear answer, you know, because it's like you have to be able to just listen to yourself, to notice, because you start to see it more clearly. Like, oh, wow, I am forming here. I'm creating that sense of me. And sometimes we feel it more by that sense that if I release that, I don't know what I'm going to be. I don't know who I am. I'm going to be unformed. And that's also a good kind of benchmark or a signpost that, oh yeah, that's kind of the edge of self and non-self. Does that help, Cub? I'm kind of going pretty far out there, but you're muted right now.
I thought I clicked it and I didn't. That's beautiful. Yeah. It makes me think of when Rodney would say, don't make something. So, yes, thank you.
Great. Thank you, Cubba. All right. Anyone here in person like to share anything? Yes, come on up.
So a question that came up in our group a lot, or once or twice, was around personality.
Yeah.
And so my question is kind of, when you're letting go of this ego and eventually letting go of this ox, do you still have your personality, the thing that makes you unique, or do you kind of drift towards everyone being kind of similar in this egoless state?
Mm-hmm. All right. Excuse me while I navigate. Yeah, so it's a great question. Like, does the personality, you know, part of this process of exploring self and non-self and that self falling away, does the personality fall away too? So there's an interesting quote from Narsagada, I believe, or maybe it was Mahasi, one of those non-dual teachers, who's very deeply realized. And his quote, his statement around this was that trying to get rid of your personality is like trying to get rid of your shadow. I mean, like the shadow cast by the sun. It's like, it just goes with you. You know, it's part of what makes you up. So this paradox is that we can look on the room and you see all these different manifestations of humanity, all the different stories, the different lives that we've led. And at the same time, if we relax that separation, we also see that deep interconnection, that deep sense of of, it's not so much sameness, but just there's a sense of non-division with that. And yet we still have our unique, we're this tall or, this old or whatever, our color or skin, all these things are still in there. It just, we don't place that as who we are. We see that as just as a manifestation. You can see this sometimes in nature. You look at a tree, I can see like there's a conifer and a deciduous tree from where I can see. They're obviously very different. But there's, if I relax that sense of me and even the idea of tree, there's a sense of unity that arises from that. So it's kind of this foreground, background, this shift. Does that kind of make sense? Yeah, but the part that changes is, like, you may still be kind of crotchety. You might be still be very lighthearted. You might be a little melancholy. But the sense of identification around that person, that part is not, it's not, doesn't land, isn't, when we really have a deep understanding, deep realization, is like we don't land in that way anymore. It just doesn't form around that because we see through it. And sometimes we see through it in a way that's, never going to come back. And often we see through it and there's a way it kind of comes back. But it doesn't come back. It's quite so strongly. It's quite so intact. Because that seeing through, that's a deep insight that we see, oh, that sense of me is not as intact as I am. And sure, I still have preferences. Sure, I still maybe react these different ways. But there's a quality of emptiness inside of that. Right, does that help, Clay?
Yeah.
Right, thank you. All right, anyone else like to share or ask anything? All right, Emery from Portland.
Right, yeah, so grateful to be here online with y'all. So I have a question about moving forward on the spiritual path that has to do with like capacity. And so I'm just wondering if you can comment a little bit on, my belief is that it takes a lot of time, a lot of sangha time and practice and meditation and time even to slow down in your life and during the day to learn more and be more present and be more in the moment and remember, just to remember. And I'm wondering, when people are in survival mode or just juggling a lot or big things going on in their life, how does that affect their path or their quote unquote progress? If that's the way, that's kind of a weird way to put it, but I'm just wondering if you can speak to that a little bit.
Sure. Of course. I'm just keeping an eye on my, it's down to 6%. So if I cut out, I'll switch back. Just have a few more minutes anyway in the evening. Yeah, so it's a great question. That certainly the sense of capacity, the sense of time or space that we have, it does help. It does help to have that space to go on retreat and to devote your life and to bring that sense of ease in your life, have things kind of cleaned up. And yet there's many people who have that time and space and go on lots of practice retreats. And yet there's not, maybe perhaps they don't deepen as much as they could. Right. So just to say it's can be a very supportive, but the most essential element, regardless of our circumstances, is that sincerity, that impulse to look in a sincere way. What I mean by a sincere way, in a way that you're willing to see through your assumptions in a very deep way, the assumptions of self and of other, right? So that can be one very sincere question. Another one might be understanding the nature of dukkha and the nature of suffering. It could be a question of where can I bring compassion to this moment? And especially when our lives are kind of falling apart, when there's all kinds of, can barely get our heads over above water. Sometimes that kind of deep intentionality, that deep curiosity, that actually is the most helpful. You'll see, okay, in the midst of that, because there's a way when life is so stressful, so difficult, it kind of strips away our normal way of being. Like I can't rely on my normal defense mechanisms, my no more coping mechanisms. All those things just can't withstand these waves of dukkha. And we can kind of be shattered by that, overwhelmed by it. We can choose to say, okay, let me surrender to that in a way that allows something else to come forth. I actually wrote an article for the newsletter, you know, around practicing in difficult times and kind of touching upon a few of those things I just said. But play with that, not looking at, okay, I can't practice because I don't have time. Look at more in terms of what is the most important part of practice, what's the deepest heartfelt impulse for practice, and bring that to the forefront and see if that is not present in the midst of dealing with your children, dealing with your work, dealing with all the difficulty in the world right now. See if you can't find that in the midst of that. And that's really the essential piece, because we can practice a lot, but if we don't have that, we can kind of go through the motions or kind of be really these earlier pictures. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just really happy being a master of meditation. But these pictures, again, they go into much a deeper place. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense, Emery?
Totally. Yeah, very helpful. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, maybe one more question if there's anyone. Yes, if you could come up.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a question or a comment. It has to do with the being satisfied with living in the world of maybe getting to a place where you could comfortably ride the ox home and sit on the ox and play your music and feel happy. You know, it's the looking to the practice to get you calm. I mean, that's not really where we want to be, but it's an easy place to, an easy stationing to try to want to get off.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, knowing that that's really not the point, but still it feels awfully, if there's a real push to just say, yeah, that's good enough, even though you know it's not.
Yes. All right. Thank you. I think it's important to, you know, if that feels like that's really where I want to be and that feels comfortable, that's okay. It's okay just to settle into that. Because I think that sense of, you know, that urgency to go through, it's you can't really make someone have that. You can't force it on someone. It needs to come from inside. It needs to come from your own internal desire. Or sometimes just through seeing. Like this, that's what's tricky about these pictures is this figure didn't start off thinking that they're going to forget the ox like next month. They thought, okay, I want to get that ox. And by actually trying to get the ox, actually working to get the ox, to chain the ox, to be able to ride the ox home and play the music, if they focused all that, what naturally happens from that without them even realizing it, sometimes the ox just disappears. So I think it's that kind of, we can see, this is kind of the two sides of practice. One is you just keep practicing until it transforms you. And the other side of it is kind of directing where you're going. And both of those have their limitations and also their benefits. If we're too directive, you know, it actually keeps us apart. If we're too kind of going through the motions, it also doesn't. So there's nothing wrong with just trying to get on that ox, trying to find the ox, wherever we might be. And again, lay it out as a progressive thing, but it could be today you're riding the ox, and then tomorrow you have no idea where that ox is. You're trying to find where that ox is. And that's how life is. Life throws circumstances at you. life, those, you know, patterns, like with the question around, you know, the stiller you get, the more these patterns come up. That's part of that going, can we cycle through these different page phases? So, you know, let just kind of hold that as a question. And it's okay if the ox seems to be, that's where I want to be, is just really taming that ox. And let yourself surrender to that, relax to that. And maybe at some point that something shifts. And if it doesn't, that's perfectly fine too. It's been, practice has been very worthwhile to be able to catch that ox, to actually tame that ox. Does that make sense? Does that help? Yeah, because we can really get kind of caught into comparing mind, judging ourselves. You know, if I was a better practitioner, then I would be doing this instead of that. Meet yourself where you are. You know, if our reason for practice is just to have a little more of a steadiness of the mind, to quiet the mind, that's perfect. The mind, it's just, if it's a different quality, that's perfectly fine too. The practice, it holds all of that. All right. Well, thank you all for your questions and engagement. And, you know, for those who are new, it's kind of a jumping to the deep end, but hopefully some of it's interesting, or like, well, that sounds, I don't know what was going on, but it sounds interesting. If it's confusing, you know, we have other offerings which are a little more concrete. And next month we will be going into the next picture, which is the ox is forgotten and the self remains. So I'll be leading most of August, except for the last week. And then Twary will come back in September. All right. So thank you all. And thank you for your continued support of Seattle Insight and of the teachers. All right. So see you next week, or whenever I next see you.